Over in Hawaii, the Mauna Loa volcano, the largest in the world, continues to erupt. Hasn't done so in 40 years. No structures are in danger. So what you have now is a tourist attraction, lava shooting up 200 feet in the air. Today, the Senate is set to vote on legislation to protect same-sex and interracial marriage. We talked about that a little earlier, and no doubt we're going to talk about that throughout the week. A study just came out. This is a workplace study, and, you know, I love these things, trying to figure out why and how and what we do at work. So this one just came out. It's research published in the Academy of Management Annals. And what it does is explore how incentive programs can encourage bad behavior at work. Bad children. Bad. And we go back to 2020. Remember the Wells Fargo scandal? Wells Fargo paid $3 billion to settle claims that its employees had committed widespread consumer fraud, opening millions of unauthorized or outright bogus accounts, forging signatures, moving money from real accounts into fake accounts, all to prove, because there was an incentive program, that they were, in fact, opening up an account, and they got paid a bonus. And the fraud was extraordinary. $3 billion they paid. And so what the regulators did is zero in on that incentive program. That was the cause. Wells Fargo said, if you open up X number of new accounts per week, per month, per year, you get quite a good bonus. Well, herein lies the problem. Fraud, fraud, fraud. So the scandal, actually, according to this research that was just published, highlights how workplace incentives can do a good job, as well as be a poison for the company. And why? Well, for the most part, they encourage bad behavior at work. Makes sense, right? You would think so, that if you're given the incentive to sell more, you're going to push more as a salesperson. Fair enough. I mean, that's the incentive. That's a commission model. But at the same time, it makes sense for you to do that. It's legitimate. There's puffery. This is the greatest. This is the best. You know, for example, I'm looking at an electric car, and I happen to go into a Tesla dealership, haven't decided what car I want, and I'm looking at a Tesla, and the salesperson comes out and talks to me and didn't do any selling at all. I go, why is that? There's no commission. That's why. There's no incentive. It's all about working in a great place, according to what the salesperson said. So here's what incentives are based on. The assumption that these rewards and punishments, if you don't make it, are the primary motivators of people's action. And so what leaders do, bosses do, is they say, okay, the more you sell, the better you do. And if you're at the bottom of the heap, we're going to make your life miserable, not necessarily cut your pay, but everybody's going to know about it. Wells Fargo, the CEO at that point said this was reprehensible and inconsistent with the values on which Wells Fargo was built. What a crock. And the prevalence of workplace incentives, this whole thing, comes out of behavior theory. I actually work with rats, and these incentive programs pay for piecework for factory workers, stock options for top employees or top executives, commissions for salespeople. They actually don't have lasting results. We know that. We know that money per se does not really do it, because you get used to money. You get a healthy raise, and all of a sudden you have a little bit more money to spend, or a lot, depending on the tax situation. And that sort of disappears in your head. So what works? Well, we knew what works. The psychologist said this works. The business analyst said it works. And what is it? Is it the money? No. It's the validation. It's feeling you're important. It's feeling like you are part of the organization. And it's reinforced, and feeling like they want you there, and actually pay attention to what you have to say, and you contribute. All of those far more important than incentives, far more important than commission schedules, although, yeah, you know, sometimes you have no choice. But you can see it happen. I've been at places where there absolutely was no commission. In my surrogacy program, I had a staff that dealt with surrogates and couples, and there was no incentive program. If you bring in X number of clients, you didn't get any extra money. You were validated. I would tell you, there is no extra money, but you're a wonderful human being. Or I'll pay for parking. It's a bad validation joke. I understand that. Now, we've talked about this before, this basic concept. Now, all it's done is be reinforced by the studies that came out that I want to share with you. Whenever these studies come out and confirm what we know, I always try to share that stuff with you. So when you are there, you're at a party and you're sitting down and you say this stuff and someone disagrees with you. No, there are studies there for real. Coming up, remote jobs are in demand, but positions are drying up. It's a mismatch. This is KFI. We've got a cold spell happening. Be prepared for a cold rain. Cold rain's going to come. And we've got a couple things going on today, some big stuff. Federal water managers are warning California cities all over the state that there's going to be less water, a lot less. Central Valley Project, which is up north where we get our fruits and vegetables. Be prepared for a fourth year of drought and even more limited water supply. That's coming up next year. So that's no fun. Welcome to climate change. A little bit about the workplace and how life has changed. I've talked about so much about this because it affects so many of us. And that is how the pandemic particularly just changed everything. We were on our way to a lot of work at home jobs. And people loved it for the most part. You've got moms that were at home. You didn't have to worry about childcare. There was no commuting. Especially here in Southern California, you can commute an hour. I think Jennifer commutes 45 minutes. And I know people that drive in over an hour each way. That disappears when you're working at home. And people, you don't have to worry about dressing up. If you have your Zoom meetings, you can go commando as long as you're looking okay from the waist up. There are a bunch of reasons that people work from home. And clearly, employees are more excited about working from home than employers. And why is that? Well, I just gave you all the reasons why working from home is great. Now, most people want some kind of hybrid. We have a hybrid here. You go down the sales department, you go through management, other than, upper management, where they come in virtually every day, and that's because they choose to. You've got effectively a three-day work week here. Mondays and Fridays are off, and Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday come in because it's work from home 2 days a week. It's a hybrid system. And you still get to do the water cooler talk. You still have management that you're reporting to in person, which meetings in person are far superior than meetings over the internet. When you're looking at a camera and you're talking to someone on a screen. But in the end, you got management wants you there, willing to suck it up and understand. And you've got employees that want to work at home. And so it seemed to work out. Rongo bongo, the great mismatch has arrived. Remote jobs are in demand. That hasn't changed. But remote positions are drying up. The job market is slowing. And a lot of Americans who have been working from home are being told, come back to the office. The poster child is Elon Musk with Twitter. And in, I would not say a very gracious way, told Twitter employees, your ass is back on the seat at work or you're done. Other companies, same philosophy, just not as brutal. So we're 3 years into the pandemic, and the pandemic has reshaped the workplace norms. We're already on our way there because of technology, because of simply employees wanting to do this. What the pandemic did is simply turbo the whole thing. And so now we're into the new world, and we've gone full blast, and we're on our way, and we're not actually, because we're stepping back. And there's a tug of war now between what employees want, what employers are willing to give them, wage increases are plateauing. Signing bonuses, which used to fall on you and you couldn't get out of the way, those are cooling off. Fewer companies are willing to allow people to work at home. Now, demand for remote jobs still way up there. They're actually right at the top, near an all-time high. And if you look to LinkedIn, and this was one of the employment experts looking at LinkedIn, this is where he did his analysis, 50% of the job applications that are submitted to LinkedIn are from work-at-home positions. Now, these are employees that want to work at home, potential employees. So half of those positions, people want those positions, I'm listing that I want to work. Half of those, I want to work from home. 15% of the listings by employers allow working from home. That's a mismatch and a big one. According to Rand Chayed, head of economics and global labor markets at LinkedIn, who did this study, took a good hard look. So there are nearly two job openings for each applicant. That's still there, but that's on-site work. If you look at remote jobs, the opposite is true. There are now two active applicants for every available work-from-home job, and this is LinkedIn. And you look at other job sites, Indeed, for example. Indeed, I do. Just love that. Easy commercial to do. Well, they're reporting similar trends. So at Indeed, remote job postings have slowed in recent months. You can look at the numbers. And even in tech-heavy areas like software development, where you're basically working by yourself and you're working at a computer, and does it matter where you do that? I mean, you're outsourcing anyway. So you're talking to someone in Ukraine. That used to be the center of all this stuff. But in India, or you're talking to someone in the Philippines, that's kind of hard to get those people into the office. So the employer is already there. Oh, no, we want you here at work. I guess the philosophy is, if we're going to pay the money and not pay someone $15 an hour overseas for a high-end coder, I want you here at work. Monster.com, a 21% job spike in job seekers looking for work-at-home positions. The postings declined 6%, not as aggressive or not as impressive as LinkedIn. And the scaling back of these remote work policies, this is the first and looks like the most visible signs of a changing job market. The market is coming back, and no one thought it would. That's becoming more clear. Signs that it's becoming a lot harder to land a job in general. We're just getting that. But if we're talking about remote from remote work, work from home, that has gone off the cliff in terms of your ability to do that. Now, work from home opportunities still exist. Depends on the industry. Education, you can do that remotely. Tourism, I don't know how. Sports, it's kind of hard to do sports without showing up. Agriculture, that's kind of hard to do. And those jobs have fallen anyway. But you have schools, gyms, other establishment open. It's hard to be a server in a restaurant without actually being there. So there are some jobs that, by definition, work from home don't exist. But management, computer jobs, tech jobs, that actually makes sense. And even though, and I don't understand this, because let's say you have a company that utilizes coding, your computers or some kind of tech. Are you going to pay someone here locally that lives in Southern California, where housing is ridiculous, versus someone who lives in Peoria, Illinois, with maybe the same skill set, and you're able to pay 60-70%, and they live a better life for that? Well, it seems to be that it doesn't make sense what's going on, because the employers are now saying, we really don't care. We want you here. Now, has that translated into we're now going to limit where we're going out to look for employees just to within an hour of our workplace? That has not appeared yet, but it's just a question of time. That will appear. So the now myth that it's all working from home, that's the future, that's where we're all going to be, don't get so quick with that. All right, coming up, Elon Musk, brilliant in some businesses. There's a couple where it's just an utter, utter failure and maybe a bunch of lies. And it is Giving Tuesday today, and it is also the 12th annual KFI Pastathon. It's also here. Chef Bruno's charity, Katerina's Club, provides more than 25,000 meals every week to kids in need in Southern California. And your generosity is what makes it happen. We have been by far the biggest donor for that charity since it started. So here is how to help. You donate right at the website, pastathon.com, and you'll also find a link to bid on the chance to have lunch with me and Steve Gregory at Brent's Deli. And not only is the food great, but just watching the two of us eat is awe-inspiring. And today, Wendy's Restaurants in Southern California donating a dollar for every Frosty sold to Pastathon. Try their new Peppermint Frosty. And if you don't want a Frosty, you can still donate at any Wendy's Wednesdays through the 4th. And I did mine Saturday. You can shop at any Smart and Final store. That's where I went in California, Arizona, and Nevada. Donate at the checkout. And tonight, there'll be a live Conway broadcast at the Anaheim White House, Chef Bruno's Restaurant. Conway will be there from 6 to 10 p.m., and the food at the Anaheim White House is nothing short of extraordinary. So, also drive-through and drop-off pasta. We collect that for the kids. Pasta and sauce at Anaheim White House. That's 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. That's through Friday. And tonight's drop-off is until 10 p.m., and 100% of your donation goes to Katerina's Club. We do this every year, and we are the man and the woman and the children.
Just stop. It's awkward.
Well, it may be awkward, but we do it all.
I'm going tonight, by the way. So anybody who wants to come, say hi, really ask me about gossip about Handle. I'm your girl or your guy.
Yeah, and there's
or the kids.
And there's lots of it, by the way. Gossip about
and me. I have it all.
Yeah, you know, the diseases, all of it.
Yep.
Fabulous. Elon Musk. I'm going to do a quick story about Elon Musk. I guarantee you that Elon Musk is going to go down in the annals of business classes and business schools forever. I mean, a true visionary. Tesla, where every other major company failed in electric vehicles, he made it. Standalone by himself. You know, when's the last time I think a company was actually able to manufacture cars and succeed? I think it was Chrysler back in the day. I think in the teens. I mean, there's just been no one else that can do it. He did it. SpaceX, visionary, completely reinvented the space travel and obviously bringing astronauts and equipment, supplies to the space station and setting up the moon and Mars. I mean, just brilliant. And then there's a boring company. Boring as in you go underground and you bore and you create subways. And this is a story about in 2020, officials in Ontario, they were going to do a commuter train about 4 miles from the airport to a train station, just to make it a little easier. It's going to be $1 billion. Musk comes in and goes, wait a minute. I can do this for $45 million. Okay, so now you have the officials going, what are our choices here? We can spend $1 billion, or we can spend $45 million, and we're talking about one of the great business visionaries, certainly of the 20th, 21st century. I mean, we've had some good ones. We've had Jeff Bezos. We've had Steve Jobs. We've had, well, certainly Elon Musk. We've had a bunch of them. And he is in that top category. So they go ahead and say, you got it. No question about it. And what he said is, let's build an underground tunnel with the boring company. That's what we're going to bore through. And travelers could zip back and forth in these autonomous electric vehicles. Now, this is not his super duper Blasto 5000 Levitron, magic Levitron train that is the vacuum train, you know, the one that sucks you through. Now, you've been to stores, banks, you got CVS stores, Costco. It has those little containers that they slip in the tubes and they just fly through and end up at the station they're supposed to be at. And it happens in just a second. Well, he was going to do that with us, with people. Now, when it comes to Costco, they have to be very small people because the containers are about 9 inches and maybe 4 inches in diameter. We're talking about trains. We're talking about the subway cars that zip through at 700 miles an hour. Don't have to worry about breaking the sound barrier because it's a vacuum. And that is the technology that he came in. And there was, and I think it was in Hawthorne, there was a test track of this stuff. I mean, granted, it was like 30 feet, understood, but the technology was there. So what I want to do is I'm going to take a break and come back because I want to tell you about, I've told you about Steve, about Elon Musk and his insane successes. Now I want to tell you about Boring Company, a little background about that and why that's also going to go down in business schools forever and not for the right reasons as far as he's concerned. And some of the big stories we are covering and no doubt will be covered by Gary and Shannon coming up. Mauna Loa continues to erupt, the big island of Hawaii. Lava shooting up 200 feet in the air. No structures are in danger, so it has become a big tourist attraction, I would think. I'd go there. I would. And Elon Musk is now in a series of tweets accusing Apple that has threatened to remove the Twitter app from the App Store as part of its review moderation process. I'm talking about Apple. The App Store. Okay, we're talking about Elon Musk. I'm going to finish the show with that. And I had mentioned that he has created two of the greatest companies and business models and reinvented space travel as well as the auto industry with the Tesla. Now, he also, and then Twitter. And that's not such a good idea with Twitter. That's going to go down as one of the big failures. That may actually go under. But he also has the Boring Company, which is not boring per se. It bores. It what it does is drill underground tunnels for the purpose of transporting people. And I told you that Ontario, the officials were going to connect by light rail, street level rail, the airport, Ontario Airport, to a station 4 miles away is going to be $1 billion. And he came in and said, no, I'll do a tunnel for $45 million. $1 billion versus $45 million. Okay, easy decision to make. Problem is, when it was time, he didn't even come in with a bid. And the same thing happened in Maryland, Chicago, L.A. So what happened? Well, this is more than he can bite off. It's a six-year-old company. It has teased cities with a pledge to solve the soul-destroying traffic, only to pull out when confronted with the realities of actually doing the work. Building a transportation hub is not building your own spacecraft, even though that's difficult enough. It has to be certified. Here, man, you've got to go through cities and buy properties, and you have to get permission from landowners, easements. I mean, it is crazy. And then the permitting process, the environmental the ERA, the ERI, Environmental Impact Studies, ERA, IRA. Anyway, the point is that it just can't be done. It just can't be done. Certainly not that way. Now, there is a tunnel open that the Boring Company did, in fact, create. And if you go to Las Vegas, there is something called the Loop Experience, 1.6 miles. And it's under the Las Vegas Convention Center and the airport. During convention time, the time it takes from the airport to the convention center, 1.6 miles, can be 45 minutes to an hour. And what he did is he built this tunnel, and this was the Boring Company. This was going to be the new technology. And what it is just a bunch of Teslas driven by drivers that are employed by Tesla. And you jump in and you go to the convention center. You go about 30 miles an hour. You jump off and back the cars come. And it's about as new technology as what I'm broadcasting on, which is technology that's been around since the 1920s. The company, though, has believers. Even with that, even though it has yet to build a single successful transport system, a public transport system, Sequoia Capital, one of the huge capital firms in the world, Vi Capital, they raised $675 million in a fundraising round, and they value the Boring Company at $5.7 billion. What it's actually worth, I don't know. We know what Twitter is not worth. Musk bought Twitter for $44 billion. And at the time of the sale, the financial experts pegged it at about a $25 billion, about half the value. And he's trying to figure out how it's going to make money. And I think he has a tough time there. And he borrowed $12 billion that he has to pay back. This morning, before I came here, I saw an interview with the head of Bank of America, who loaned Musk a good part of that $12 billion. And he said, oh, no, we have a lot of faith in him. We have a lot of faith in the company. Yeah, exactly. And so the problem with, for example, in San Bernardino County, the Transportation Authority has been fighting to find a solution for the passenger travel. It's growing. The airport's growing like crazy. It doesn't have a lot of infrastructure. And so it turned to Musk. And it went from $45 million that he originally pledged. Now the cost projections, even though he hasn't come through with a bid, the cost projections now by others rose about, it rose to almost $500 million. It went up 11 points, 11 times. So his idea is to have this underground hyperloop. This is where you have those vacuum tubes that fly around stores inside where they usually put cash, et cetera, and into the space that it goes or where it's supposed to go. And I've yet to figure out how that works. And he wants to do that with massive tunnels and this kind of technology. I mean, it's pretty neat technology. Now, are there other technologies out there? Yeah, there's magnetic, the Levitron, where you have a light rail system that actually floats on top of the rails. And it's a magnetic force that opposes, it's a negative magnetic force that actually keeps the system just a fraction of an inch above that. That's in China. That actually works. I think it's Beijing or Shanghai, and that zips along at a couple hundred miles an hour, and that works. So the only place where you're having this kind of high-end technology is, in fact, in China. Wow.